Ready, aim, fish fry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. In preparation for today's podcast, I did some lumbar stretches, did those neck circle thingies, and a whole bunch of jumping jacks. And then realized it was digital backbones we're talking about, so at least I'm rather limber for today's podcast. So a little later on, Duke Hoi Tran from AI Tech joins me to discuss the enablement of digital backbones for military applications, the evolution of COTS in the mil-aero space, and why standardization is crucial in this arena. But before we bring Duke in, you know what time it is. It's time for a little news you may have missed. MIT is at it again, edition. Here on Fish Fry, we love a good MIT story. And this one, my friends, does not disappoint. So, what if our clothes could collect, store, and process data? Sounds kind of crazy, right? Well, if a team of scientists from MIT has anything to do with it, it'll move from crazy to reality. Because they have created the first ever digital fabric fiber that can not only process and store information, but can also analyze it as well. So, what are we really talking about here? Well, until now, previous work in this arena, in electronic fibers in particular, has been analog. But this new fiber changes that completely. Yoel Fink, professor at MIT and the senior author on this study, explains it like this. He says, "This work presents the first realization of a fabric with the ability to store and process data digitally, adding a new information content dimension to textiles and allowing fabrics to be programmed literally." Okay, so how did they create this first-of-its-kind fiber? First, they placed hundreds of silicon microscale digital ICs into a preform that they then used to develop a polymer fiber. They were then able to create a fiber with a continuous electrical connection between the chips by precisely controlling the flow of the polymers. And this electrical connection ended up being the length of tens of meters long. And get this, this whole set of devices are also individually addressable and independently operated through a single connection at the fiber's edge. This way, this team was able to switch on the functionality of one element without turning on all of the elements. MIT PhD student Gabriel Locke explains it like this. He says, "You can think of our fiber as a corridor and the elements like rooms, and they all have their own unique digital room numbers." Cool, right? So what about the fiber itself? Well, it's thin and flexible and can be passed through a needle, sewn into fabrics, and can be washed at least 10 times without degradation. And what it can do is kind of crazy. This team was able to write, store, and read information on this new type of digital fiber, including a 767 kilobit full-color short movie file and a 0.48 megabyte music file. And even cooler, these files can be stored for 2 months without power. Okay, that's great. But remember when I said something about analyzing the data too? Back in the beginning of this story? So this team was also able to include artificial intelligence into the fiber memory as well, including a neural network of 1,650 connections. And when they sewed this fiber around the armpit of this prototype shirt, they found that they were able to collect 270 minutes of surface body temperature data from the person wearing the shirt, and then were able to analyze how that data corresponded to different physical activities. From there, using this data, they trained that neural network within the fiber to know within a 96% accuracy what activity the person was doing while wearing the shirt. So, what's next for this revolutionary new digital fiber fabric? Well, as you can undoubtedly imagine, especially with the addition of AI, this could lead to a whole lot of different kinds of fabrics with digital components that could collect a huge amount of information about the body over time. Right now, this fiber is controlled by a small external device. But this team has its sights set on designing a new IC that would work as a microcontroller that could be connected within the fiber itself. Wow. So if you want even more information about this groundbreaking new digital fiber fabric, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's fish frying page on eejournal.com, including a research paper called Digital Electronics in Fibers Enable Fabric-Based Machine Learning Inference. So cool. All right, from digital fibers to digital backbones, please welcome Duc Hoi Tran from AI Tech to talk about open standards-based digital backbones and the future of military embedded systems. Hi, Duc. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we're talking about open standards-based digital backbones and the future of military embedded systems today. So first off, what kind of trends are you seeing affecting these kinds of digital systems today?
So we see a few trends affecting the digital backbone in recent years. Particularly last year, there was a shortage of chips, a shortage of the silicons. And you see that it's everywhere. And it's no different in the military and embedded world, where the military in the future it rely a lot of processing power. And so we see an accelerated need for computing power. The use case for the computing power, it's also used for AI and machine learning. And this is something that is going everywhere. We have things like unmanned systems. It could be either drones, could be unmanned vehicle, it could be airplane. All these things have to operate unmanned. And so this drives a lot of need for computing power. And also everything needs to be connected as well. The other big trend that we see is the fact that the supply chain is taking bigger and bigger systems. So as things get more and more complex, you see that the whole supply chain of it is taking larger and larger components of it. And so the third trend that we see happening is the whole interconnects of many companies having to work together. And the other trend that leads us to the digital backbone is the wide adoption of open standards. So when you have a combination of accelerating computer power, companies have to work together, things are getting more complex. If you don't have adoption of an open standard such as SOSA and FACE, it's not possible to do that. And so all these things are connected and one kind of build on top of each other. Other couple trends that we see that are not necessarily new, but things are always need to be developed faster and cheaper. And the acceptance of cuts that is fairly common now in the military and aerospace industry.
Okay, so let's back up a second and talk specifically about that digital backbone. So for my audience who may not know, explain a bit what you mean by digital backbone.
So digital backbone, the best way to understand this is kind of the analogy of the humans where you have the brain as the processing power. You have the sensors and actuators, which are your hands and your feet and all your senses. And the digital backbone is your spine and everything kind of connects to that. It's a bit like information highway. If you replace that now with electronics and you have the processor connected to a digital backbone, which is kind of the information highway and all the systems and sensors connect to it. So this is in simplistic term what it is. What we're doing with that is using a digital backbone based on COT systems. And some of the big benefit of the digital backbone is that it significantly reduced the cost and the time to develop it. And as you add the new functionalities, it's also easier to integrate. It's also allowed for third-party companies to integrate into the backbone itself without having to redesign the system every single time. So it creates a lot of flexibilities that's built in. An aircraft or ground vehicle for a military application tend to have decades of lifetime. And so in that amount of time, the technology changes a lot, and the digital backbone allows upgradability that's much easier. You can just plug into the digital backbone as opposed to redesigning everything from scratch. Now, of course, I'm simplifying a little bit because there will always be some kind of work. But in short, this is what the digital backbone is.
Okay, so you mentioned COTS earlier, and that is definitely a big trend in this arena these days. How do you see COTS being used in the future of military system development?
So if we look into what the future of the battlefield is, and when we think about unmanned systems, when you think about military robotics or smart soldier or space or communications, all these things rely on high processing power and the latest technology. In a sense, you cannot achieve that without COTS, because the speed of technology change of COTS rely on consumer product is moving at a much faster rate than the military or the government or anyone can follow. And so COTS is becoming the trend that we see is only accelerating the adoption of COTS. The COTS technology development is going at a much faster rate. Some of the key benefits of COTS and why it's widely accepted today is, first of all, it's much cheaper. It's developed much faster and lower the development costs. You don't have to design something from scratch. And what we see COTS is started off in industrial, then it goes into military and aerospace, and now it's penetrated into space. And this is one thing that AeroTech we're doing is we're moving a lot of the COTS stuff into space as well. In terms of the benefit you're looking at, you can have up to a 90% reduction in cost compared to a custom system in space. So this is kind of the next frontier of the trend that we see is it's moving into space as well, particularly in the low orbit environment where it's not as stringent as, let's say, going to Mars. And we have about 30 years of AeroTech into space already, and we've flown trillions of miles without a single failure. So it's proven to be very reliable as well.
Now, Doug, standardization is crucial here as well, right? You mentioned SOSA and the FACE initiative earlier. Can you discuss how that's playing a part?
Yeah, the digital backbone that we've been talking about would not be possible without open standard SOSA FACE. Well, it is possible, but it's not very easy, because the whole point of having a digital backbone is to have ease of integration, of interoperability between suppliers and between vendors, and the ease of increasing time to market, lower development costs. This is the intent of SOSA and FACE, and this is what makes the digital backbone possible. So it is something that's absolutely key for us to have. And so instead of spending time on money and resource, make sure things work with each other, the focus can be focusing on functionalities, because you don't have to worry so much about if you connect with another suppliers that it would work, that you'd have to build a new interface every single time. And so SOSA is providing the hardware infrastructure, and FACE provide kind of the software interface that makes sure that things work in between. So it is something that is very crucial for us to adopt these standards. And as a result, we are developing a couple of key products around FACE and SOSA, and we're building a complete digital backbone with us using some of those standards as well.
All right. So let's talk specifically about AI tech. What are you guys doing in particular to address all of these needs?
So a couple of things we're doing. One is, firstly, we're developing SOSA-aligned products. And so we have one that's called UC530 and the other one UC8770. These are SOSA aligned boards that we're producing. We are also producing a digital backbone for various verticals. So we are developing, for example, for the vertical lift aircraft, we are developing that for the unmanned ground vehicle. We're doing that for the small sat as well, using open standards and developing digital backbone systems that we can go into various verticals. And drones is another one that we are developing. And so where we're going, it's doing COTS for a long time. And now with the evolution of COTS, it's to move into space and also into systems of COTS that we are providing using all of that. And also another thing we're doing is we're collaborating with other companies as well. The beauty of having a SOSA Align and Phase is that now you can integrate a lot easier with some of our partners.
Excellent. All right. It is time for your off-the-cuff question. So since you haven't been on my show before, we're doing a little COVID food-related off-the-cuff. So if you could have one meal right now, it doesn't matter if you need a passport to get there, the restaurant is closed, it's on the other side of your state even, what would you have?
Usually, I guess it'll be something that I like all my life, and COVID or not. And I'm Vietnamese, and one of the most famous Vietnamese dishes called pho. It's like a beef noodle soup. That's the one I'll always give that as an answer to the meal to have at any given time.
I love it. Awesome. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere you get your podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this program, please leave me a review on that platform of your choice. And if you'd like any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or if you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of June 11th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.